The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science and technology, only funnier. I'm Pete Ledovitz, and today, unfortunately, I am not joined by my ever-effervescent co-host, but as Trent pointed out, we don't have a mic for him anyway, so who really cares? No doubt he's testifying in front of Congress yet again about some sort of abuses in the hair gel industry. But today's show is entitled Invention Plus Adventure Equals Inventure. Okay, I'm waiting for you to laugh at that one. You're usually looking at any cheesy wordplay. You're jumping on me like a pack of dingoes.
That was terrible wordplay.
Okay, and the man who invented that wordplay is one of our guests here today, Professor Craig Forrest from the School of Mechanical Engineering here at Georgia Tech. And dare I say, one of the founding developers of the Inventure Prize. Craig, what is your role in the Inventure Prize?
Well,
you're the dude. I just call you the dude.
I'm a professor in mechanical engineering, and together with several other professors, Ray Vito, Merrick First, and Ravi Bellamkonda, we have created an undergraduate invention competition on campus called the Inventure Prize,
right,
which has quickly grown to become the largest undergraduate contest at Georgia Tech. And just one statistic was that our finale last month was watched live on television by 24,000 households in Georgia.
And that's not only because this is an amazing example of innovation culture at Georgia Tech, but because you finally had a good-looking host. Is that it?
Who was
the host for the finals?
we were lucky to get Miles O'Brien. He's the science and technology correspondent for CNN. And he's quite...
I saw his picture on the website. He's a very comely gent. Let me just leave it at that.
That picture might have been photoshopped somewhat.
Well, but look, even if you Photoshop me and put hair on me, I'm not even going to compete with this guy. So kudos to you for at least realizing you need to engage the public in this whole thing. So now, you actually did your master's and PhD at MIT, but you did your undergraduate degree here at Georgia Tech, where you kind of got started in the whole invention thing. You ended up on, what was it, American Inventors?
Well, yeah, I was an undergrad here, and, you know, to be perfectly honest, as a young inventor, there were not a lot of resources on campus to help someone out like me. There was no way for me to build any prototype. There was no way for me to learn about how to analyze the market to find out if anyone would ever buy this thing. There's no way for me to try to get a patent on the idea. So having the honor of coming back here a decade later, it's been a real pleasure to work with several other like-minded faculty to try to change this culture and make Georgia Tech more and the campus, the entire campus and the state, actually more entrepreneurial and innovative.
Okay, great. All right, and also joining us are the winner and the runner-up from the Inventure Prize for this year. So first, from Duluth, Georgia, a mechanical engineering major, Patrick Whaley.
Hey.
Patrick, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about it in detail later, but the name, do you call it OmegaWare?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, and that's Omega meaning end, meaning this is sort of weight, strength training. If an old guy like me puts it on, it will be the end of me. I'll just fall down along the curb. People will leave me alone. No, it's not designed that way?
No. Okay. It's Omega for resistance. And all eight finalists are really winners. I mean, we're all winners. We all got there. We all went through the program. And we all have opportunities that we didn't have initially.
Right.
And just like Craig said, there's a lot of key features from the Inventure Prize program that gives us a lot of benefits, much like what he didn't have then, he's now providing now, which is an amazing product.
Wow. So, Craig, this guy's smooth. He sounds like he just won the Super Bowl, and I'm asking him if he's going to Disney World or something like that.
I would be going to Disney World if I won the Super
Bowl. Right? Okay. And our runner-up candidate is from Huddleston, Virginia, an aerospace engineering major, Sarah Vaden. And yours was on music.
Yeah, it was music.
So it's called what? Is the novel drum? Is that what you call it?
Well, it is a novel drum, but I actually call it the pep pedal.
Okay, the pep pedal or the pet pedal?
Pep. We'll put some pep in it.
Put some pep in it. Okay. So are you a drummer here as well?
I am a drummer. I play in a couple campus ministry organizations right mm-hmm. now, and I'm hoping to get more involved in the music certificate program here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and it's too bad Bill's not here because he's actually involved in some of the technology music centers here. We had a great discussion with one of our callers on piezoelectric crystals. Somebody called in and reminded us it's the best application of piezoelectric crystals, of course, was the piezoelectric guitar pickup. So Bill gets very excited about that sort of thing. So, like I said, he's probably testifying in front of Congress, so that's just not going to happen today. So let's begin the program with a segment we like to call
Science in the News.
So today's Science in the News article really isn't Science in the News, but that's never stopped us before, ladies and gentlemen. It comes from the Straits Times out of Singapore on April 3rd of this year. And it's written by Cassandra Chu, entitled Competing on Value, Not Price Tags. Innovation, it points out, is now spoken in the same breath as productivity and skills. Top government leaders have stressed the need for innovation to underpin Singapore's new economic drive. Just what is innovation? Well, innovation culture can innovation culture be fostered? Insights present views from experts and highlights three examples of innovation in action. They actually start with an example of Singapore Management University students with their professor Desai Narasimhalu going into a bank and looking at how they're changing the way they do business. They also point out they're changing the way they do technology. And they even point out that it really is a culture change, change that they see as a way to break away from something that happens a lot in the East, the commodities trap, in which competing businesses that sell the same products end up slashing prices and cutting profit margins to gain business. That is, companies should compete based on the value of their products, not the appeal of their price tags. It's really a change from impacting the bottom line, which old geezers like me heard for years and years when we worked in industry, to impacting the top line, right? Bottom line was, you know, can you cut labor? Can you cut materials costs? Now we're going to start from the beginning. And my contention is if they're doing this in Singapore, they're doing this just about everywhere. And that represents, I guess, a serious challenge to us here in the U.S. because I would contend that the advantage we have always had is that we are an innovation engine, right? That a lot of these commodity companies, commodity industries are moving offshore. They're going to other places. People get worried about that. I'm not worried about that because innovation, we're always coming up with the high value added stuff. And I think it's consistent with what this article is saying. But now we're being challenged from all over the place. So I don't know. Craig's looking at me like I have two heads. You disagree?
Well, I'm just concentrating, and that's the little scowl I get when I do that.
Okay.
No, but you know, how can the U.S. retain an edge in a global competitive market? And I think innovation is definitely going to be one of the key drivers. How do we promote that culture nationwide, statewide, and at organizational levels and at the individual level? You know, I think that, you know, we can't be so cocky to think that Americans have some inherent skill that other countries can't acquire.
Oh yeah, I agree.
It's simply the rules of the game we play by, our government system and the cultures that we can affect that are going to allow us to retain our competitive advantage. And
yeah, and this article actually points out that innovation starts with education. I agree. There's nothing inherent about Americans
right.
that makes them better at this.
Right.
But it's always been the system. It's been a little more open.
Yeah.
And maybe other places are starting to catch up. I mean, to see the breadth of people considering this, it's actually a quote in here from Dr. Alan Robinson, master instructor at the Fashion Institute of Technology Center for Innovation Management in New York. He notes that several of the world's top innovative companies, such as the internet giant Google and technology from Toshiba, dedicate up to 20% of their time exploring innovation. And that's true of companies out here like 3M, GE, Gore-Tex has a lot of resources toward innovation. But I guess what we're talking about today is, and they point out that if innovation starts with education, is it too late for companies? What do we do with the education level, right? That's what the Inventure program is all about, correct?
Yeah, I mean, here at Georgia Tech, you know, we have one of the top 10 engineering schools in the country, and what are we doing to encourage our young people to go for it, to take their crazy idea and start a company and make a career for themselves out of it? You know, the contrast after having gone to MIT and come back was apparent to me and some of my colleagues here in mechanical engineering, in that Georgia Tech is proud to have one of the largest career fairs in the country. We have about 400 companies.
It's very impressive. Yeah.
It's amazing. The Exxon, Schlumberger, you know, John Deere, they're scooping up our students. And that's wonderful. Okay. Our students can come here and 4 years later go to the career fair in the Coliseum with a resume and get one of those great jobs. But what we also want them to know is that if they've got their own crazy idea, they can do it themselves. And
crazy would be the technical term for unique and innovative, right?
Right.
Novel.
It's technical vernacular, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the fact that InVenture is a big part of all sorts of things that colleagues like Bill Singhos is doing with you and other folks over in mechanical engineering and other places on campus to foster this culture of entrepreneurship, innovation, which clearly MIT has had for a while. I think they were one of the pioneers to do this. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but let's at least maybe look at some concrete examples. So let's go to our top finishers from the InVenture Prize.
Definitely.
And ask them a little bit about their project, how they did it, did they lose their mind along the way, what did they learn about this whole process. And before I do that, as you're listening, if you've got a question or comment about innovation, the InVenture program, crazy ideas that Craig referred to before, by all means, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. So let's start with Patrick Whaley. And now you said it was called OmegaWare.
Omega.
Not because it will terminate my life, because I'm out of shape, but because of resistance, right?
Resistance.
Omega is the Greek letter used for electrical resistance typically. So,
yep.
So what is your project and what does it do?
My project is obviously OmegaWare, as you said. And basically what it is, it's a tight-fitting shirt with hydrogel inserts that add resistance to your normal day activities. So in a sense, you could go and you could vacuum, you could do the dishes, you could do whatever, and you could experience a hypergravity effect on your body, thereby increasing your metabolic rate and whatnot. But you could also use for speed and agility training, or therapeutic uses as I used it for. So
okay, so then it's a little different than what I understood from the website. I thought it was just weight. But it's not just weight, it's also physical resistance of you moving around, hence the tightness. Right?
Well, no, the resistance comes from your change of momentum. So every time you make a change in movement, then you're going to have a resistance opposing that movement. So going from the idea of hypergravity training where into an idea of, okay, how do I make it more comfortable, more feasible, and also more economical. But you could also put it in the microwave and heat it up, cool it down for different therapeutic usages as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, and the fact that it's tight-fitting means big marketing possibilities down at the Jersey Shore is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
The situation's going to buy one of these right away. Okay.
Well, I've been working on this for about 5 years now, and I kind of ran into the same stuff that Craig did. And it's kind of come into the fact where you have to go out and you have to search for your own opportunities. And with the InVenture Prize, it really gave me a new inspiration. You have people behind you. You have more support. And it's easy to get deterred along the way. And so with the InVenture Prize, I mean, there's more than just winning or losing. It's all about building a camaraderie with other like-minded individuals.
Ah, okay. So. And realizing that maybe you're not as insane as you might think.
Absolutely not. Absolutely
not. Because actually, we didn't get to the article pointed out that it's a long, difficult road, and there are lots of obstacles to innovate and create something.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we do some strange things with our research here at Georgia Tech, some very non-traditional outreach things and innovation things. And there are people that think you're nuts, right? I mean, a hydrogel shirt, what were they thinking?
I was actually told that it was probably going to be a bad idea. I had almost everybody tell me that I wasn't going to go anywhere with it, and that's really what you have to face as an entrepreneur, as an inventor. You have to face adversity, mm-hmm. And going forward with your idea, your invention, a crazy idea, as Craig's like to refer to it. You really have to have your own mindset, and you have to be able to analyze, you know, is it feasible? Sometimes it's not feasible with the technology readily available, but other times it's just not feasible because you're not willing to put in that effort. Sometimes you just need that extra little support. But I've always had extremely strong drive, so I've been pushing it, and every single prototype has caused a whole new group of individuals to all of a sudden get behind me when they at first didn't want to even invest.
So your statement actually points out something kind of interesting that I wouldn't have thought of, that these aren't all just ideas that people say, well, we're going to enrolled for the Inventure Prize, and mm-hmm. we're going to come up with an idea, and we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. These are things that people have been thinking about for months or years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, and maybe, as you mentioned before, Craig, the only thing to put them over the edge and get them moving on this was this environment with similar crazy-minded people that are encouraging them.
Well, we were really surprised by that in creating this competition. When I say we, I mean the organizers. We thought there'd be a few scattered students around campus who'd had ideas and would be happy to come out and come on stage and show them to a panel of judges. But when we opened up the competition and advertised it, we had hundreds of students come forth. Mm-hmm. This year, mm-hmm. 300 undergrads competed to be in the seats that Patrick and Sarah are sitting now. And so there was this repressed need for the resources, structure, and incentives to help inventors on campus succeed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. And also, I mean, Georgia Tech is very unique. We're all kind of, you know, in the same boat. Everybody has amazing ideas. It comes down to that initial incentive, like what he's talking about. Sometimes you just need somebody to sit there and say, you know what, you can do this.
Okay.
Where others are just extremely motivated and want to do it themselves. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's always extremely hard to try to find those resources.
Okay, so your shirt's based on hydrogel technology, mm-hmm. right? So when I think of a hydrogel, I think of hydro, water, a water-swollen cross-linked polymer network. Is that what it is?
It's basically like being pregnant.
Did you get the swollen ankles and the hemorrhoids too? That's what I want to know.
No, hemorrhoids come on with an additional attachment.
Okay. But, all right, that'll be in the second version of the
product. It's a more advanced feature.
So what do you actually make it out of? I mean, is it a water swollen polymer?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, it's similar. I like to compare it kind of to Jell-O. It's basically got elastomers.
Which is a hydrogel, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which has polymers inlaid into it, so it's actually elastic. It's like an elastic Jell-O, if you will.
Okay.
And by utilizing that, you also retain the properties of water. So heating effects, cooling effects.
Right.
But then you also have the gradient. It absorbs your sweat. It's also a glycerin base, so you don't. It's an antimicrobial gel as well.
Ah,
it's used
okay.
in the medical industry.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of key features to the gel. But the shirt, in a sense, was made just for the hypergravity training. And I wanted it initially for athletes, and I started noticing all the different markets that it could penetrate.
Right.
And, you know, it just every time I turn around, it's another market. I actually just got interest from the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. So that was pretty exciting.
Cool.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question, because, you know, we are a science show. I'm interested in polymers. Anytime someone uses a polymer, I'm like, yeah. So it sounds like it's an open hydrogel. Can you evaporate the water from it and add it to it?
No, it's actually a thermoset. So it's very similar to a Jell-O, if you will.
Okay. But will it dry out if I leave it out there?
No.
Without any? Okay.
No,
okay.
It won't. No, it's completely inclusive. But I actually, you can cut it with a pizza cutter, so it doesn't leak out or anything.
Okay.
It's a solidified piece of gel.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's really good, because I was thinking it was open. I sweat a lot. That could really be an advantage for me. So then, when you said the properties of water, I mean, this is really what innovation is all about. You come up with an idea, and then you modify it, and you enhance it. You realize, well, water's got this huge heat capacity. If I want to store heat or absorb heat, so, you know, what you're saying is I can put this in the refrigerator or the freezer. If I've got, you know, swelling I want to take down, do that. And then if I want to enhance blood flow to something instead of the heating pad, I can do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I used it for my therapy. It just, there's a lot of key benefits to the shirt. I mean, you can wear it for pretty much everyday use. It's non-restrictive. Okay. And that side of everything was a side that I didn't initially anticipate, but going through the whole process of innovation really.
And when you say your therapy, what exactly are you referring to? You had a physical recovery process recently, or?
Yeah, I was actually I was shot in the chest during an armed robbery, so I had a lot of
scar
tissue.
And this was relatively recent, right?
Yes, sir, it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had a lot of scar tissue build up, and the main feature of my product allowed me to overcome a lot of that scar tissue. And by increasing
Great.
Circulation, increasing blood flow to the areas,
mm-hmm.
It really helped me alleviate a lot of the pain that the physical therapist wasn't able to reach.
Right.
You go to a physical therapist once or twice a week, but then the rest of the time you have to really either stretch on your own or try to go through whatever those steps are. And my product would allow the user to go through the process throughout his day without, taking his time out, let's say like taking an hour and a half,
right,
and trying to exercise more.
Right, so. Right, exactly. So it was like continuous exercising.
Absolutely.
But the advantage is it's a more evenly distributed bit of inertial resistance.
Absolutely.
Instead of the ankle weights or the wrist weights or that things are, like that.
Yeah. And the ankle weights and wrist weights are really, really harmful on your joints. What the shirt does is actually absorb it. Yeah, it actually absorbs that centrifugal motion and actually applies it into your torso, which can actually take the load.
So. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, just a reminder to our listening audience, if you've got a question or comment about innovation or the Inventure Prize here at Georgia Tech, give us a call to talk with our top finishers for the Inventure Prize here at Georgia Tech at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. Now, let's switch to our runner-up here, Sarah Vaden, who's an aerospace engineer, but you had an invention that really didn't have much to do with aerospace engineering.
No, not too much. Okay. I mean, there's some airflow in there, but
okay. So tell us about the novel drum.
All right. Well, drummers have hugely been left behind any sort of musical innovation in the last 100 years, and it was really frustrating to me as a drummer to not really be able to explore more creative melodies, more creative rhythms, and so I thought I was in chemistry class one day, and we were talking about gas laws, and it just hit me. So I ran home and started blowing into my drum, and I was watching it, and I could change the pitch on the fly just by
So you changed the pressure in the cavity.
Right.
And more importantly than that, you actually learned something in chemistry class. Let's pause. Let's have a moment of silence here, because believe it or not, when we moved from Radio Sandy Springs, our first program here featured Lauren Williams, who, by the way, will be on the show next week talking about Origin of Life and his new NASA Center. It was a show entitled Chemistry and Why We Hate It. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. The reason to love chemistry, you'll get cool drums out of it.
Exactly.
And then one comment you made, though, you said that, you know, drummers were kind of left behind, you know, in the whole innovation. So I'm assuming you're not including the drum kit. You're kind of like, what's his name, the star of the movie The Rocker, who considers, you know, electronic drum loops and drum kits. The tools of the devil, things like that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of electronic drums, and most drummers you talk to probably won't be either.
Yeah, my brother's a drummer, and yes, he believes it's some satanic kind of thing. So. Okay, so you realize something from the ideal gas. I can't believe this. Somebody learned something in chemistry. I'm very excited. Then you went home, and you're blowing in your drum, and nobody like walked by and saw you do this, did they?
No, thankfully it was in my basement. So
okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, so you realize you could change the pitch. So then, how did you exploit that for the invention?
Well, I know that drummers like to use all of our limbs in as many crazy possible ways as possible, and
like a party group here.
It's a party. But I realized that I could integrate this air technique into standard hardware, and so drummers now are playing double bass drum pedals. So they have two pedals. We have the hi-hat pedal, and I was like, well, why not just add another pedal or incorporate into one of those?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started building it and using it on my own kit underneath my hi-hat pedal, and it worked beautifully, and I got to bring it to gigs. And
oh, wow. So, right, so instead of having your double bass drum, so if you look at a standard trap set, you know, most jazz players will have one. It was only those crazy rockers that maybe started in the 70s when I was listening to rock and roll that put the double bass in. Hi-hat, of course. See, normally we have to define technical words like hydrogen. Hi-hat, two cymbals slamming together controlled by a pedal. Is that the best way to
define
it?
Yeah, that sounds good.
And the only reason I know this is because, like I said, my brother's a drummer. I shared a room with him until I was like a senior in high school. Do you know how loud drums are when they're practicing in your bedroom? It's not a pleasant
thing. It's got to be pretty miserable.
It is. It's absolutely horrible. So I mean, you actually incorporated in the hi-hat pedal, or you just took a separate hi-hat pedal and have a little squeegee that pumps air into the bass? Is that where it's going?
No. This is for your tom-toms. So this is the drums that accent the snare, give you your drum fills.
Right. So these are the bigger upright drums, not the snare with the little wire thing in the bottom.
Right.
So I can explain to people that know nothing about drums what drums are, because my brother tormented me for years. Wow, so you're playing your tom-toms, and you can change the pitch.
Right, exactly. So you can go to your tom-toms for a solo and make two or three tom-toms sound like 20 is the idea.
So you could just be... Okay, so let me think. So as you pump more air in, the pitch goes up.
Right.
Okay, so good. I understand the ideal gas law as well then. And so you're playing your... Because you have two. They're at different pitches. And then one or both of them are just going up. And then they can go down.
Right, exactly. You can create a whole new melodic structure out of two or three drums.
So that's totally cool. So what have you done this in a performance yet? I mean, because I'll be honest with you, I love listening to music. you're listening to music, and suddenly the tom-tom pitches are changing. I'm going to the bar saying, what did you put in my drink? Because I'm very confused here. And in fact, you say you do this with some ministry type things. I mean, do they freak out?
I mean, I don't play a set in the, I play congas or djembe here at Tech, but okay. I played in a high school jazz band back in high school, and so I used it in one of my performances there.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. So what, so then you did this back when you were in high school.
Right.
So again, like with Patrick, this is something you've been working on for a while.
Right, but it's, you know, for me it was more of, I have this cool idea, but, you know, I don't have anywhere near the resources to do anything with it, and so I was stuck for, you know, 3 years.
Wow. So, I mean, are people listening to these things in performances now, and like, wow, that's the coolest thing I ever heard, and they're...
I mean, when I play it, they hear that. I haven't brought it out to production, to the market yet.
But, oh, okay.
I hope that people's mouths will drop open, and, you know, people's minds will be opened about who a drummer is and what their role is once I get it out to market.
But, I mean, so I go into Guitar Center and stores like that all the time, and I'm just thinking, you know, musicians are strange people, right? I have two brothers who are musicians. I play the trumpet. We've actually played together. I used to play in a jazz combo here at Georgia Tech. This sounds like exactly the kind of thing that musicians go to Guitar Center. I got to have that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So do you have any plans to market it?
Definitely. I'm pursuing getting my final production up to speed right now, and then I'm going to hit the local music stores first and kind of get some industry feedback. And then my hope is to go to Guitar Center and Musicians Friends, a big catalog company, and similar types of avenues as that, and just see, you know, whether or not I can get this product in the same place that you would buy a bass drum pedal or a hi-hat pedal or any sort of drum accessory.
So both these ideas are... I'm ready to buy both these products. I don't even play the drums. I could certainly use the extra resistance. And I'm ready to buy either one of these products.
You might be able to keep your class awake with a chemistry demo if you buy my pedal.
I try to use cheesy jokes, but they don't always work at 8 o'clock in the morning. So this may actually be a good alternative. So before we go to how hopefully the Inventure Prize program helped you do this and is helping you realize this now, just a reminder, if you've got a question or comment about... you know, resistance training shirts that hopefully the Dallas Cowboys will be using shortly, or freaky tone-changing drums, or invention, or adventure, or, you know, I'm glad to see that Craig's got a lot of product in his hair, because normally that's Bill's role. If we didn't have someone with a lot of product in their hair, it wouldn't be Inside the Black Box, ladies and gentlemen. But if you have a question or comment about invention or the Inventure program, give us a call here at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. So, Craig, what exactly does the Inventure program do to help these budding inventors? They get some cashola from this, right?
Oh, yeah. So these 300 undergrads, so we blanket the campus with advertisement, and 300 undergrads came to us and said, sounds fun, let's do it. So we initially asked them to go to our website and register. They have to tell us about their idea, tell us about other similar ideas that exist, tell us what they'd need to go on stage and present the idea. We let them compete for prototype awards. So in both Sarah and Patrick's case, they were awarded some money to help them build prototypes or improve their existing prototypes. And then through a series of rounds with faculty members helping to judge the inventions, we narrow it down to the very best eight. And on March 17th, those eight came on stage here on campus at the First Center. There were 1,000 people in the audience. And we partnered with Georgia Public Broadcasting to produce a television show, which aired live that night, with an additional 24,000 people watching. So it was just a big celebration of invention and nerdiness, not only to help these bright people, Sarah and Patrick, who are going to be successful, they're going to take their ideas to market and make it, but also to try to encourage young people to pursue careers in science and engineering, or to encourage other undergraduates to come out and do this with their own ideas, whether they are part of the Inventure Prize or not.
So, and then they also get a lot of legal services to help them obtain intellectual property, right?
Right, right. So we couldn't show these eight finalists on stage on statewide television without protecting their ideas in some way. So we worked with local law firms to provisionally patent all eight of the finalists' inventions. And now Sarah and Patrick, and part of their prize for having won is that they'll continue to work with those law firms to file full utility applications, which right. you know could right. cost over $20,000 if they were to do it themselves.
Right. So what a lot of people don't realize is hopefully InVenture is becoming part of a seamless integration of neat things that we're doing here on the campus, right? So, for example, courses that you teach, courses that Bill Singhos teaches, Jonathan Colton teaches a cross-disciplinary course out of ME. You know, they can take advantage of that. But didn't you put together, you've got some kind of lab now where people go to.
Well, one of the challenges as a young inventor is, how do I build this thing? I mean, most engineers are actually making something, whether it's a software yeah. or a hardware.
Take some tools.
Right. So, we worked with local companies to raise the money, and we also were awarded a proposal from Georgia Tech from the Technology Fee Fund, thanks for that, to build about a $500,000 facility within mechanical engineering, which has all of the latest cutting-edge prototyping tools. It's got a water jet machine that can cut metal with a stream of water. We've got a laser.
I love that. I still haven't seen it yet. We got to like go over there and like, you know, cut some turkeys in half or something like that.
Yeah, you can cut food with it, make Valentine's presents. We've got a laser cutter. It does the same thing with a laser. We've got two three-dimensional printers. So what you do to use these is you construct a model of your invention in your computer, and then you press print as you would print like a Word document mm-hmm. from your computer. But the three-dimensional model comes up out of this machine.
So is this like liquid resin rapid prototyping?
Yeah, there are several different technologies that we're using.
Okay, cool.
But they create a high-resolution plastic model of right. your idea.
Right.
And so cool. with this suite of prototyping tools, it's a facility called the Invention Studio. It's mm-hmm. open 24 hours a day. It's become our most used facility in mechanical engineering.
Right.
And it is changing not only how the undergrads build things, but faculty members are in there, grad students are in there.
Cool.
It's changing the culture. Yeah.
And even students that are not finalists in the Invention
oh, yeah.
prize are there. Well, actually, we've got a caller.
Hello?
Welcome to Inside yeah. the Black Box. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah. I didn't catch the fellow's name who had the hydrogel invention.
Patrick Whaley.
Patrick. Patrick Whaley, have you suggested that to NASA, that the NASA astronauts try your invention? Because, you know, they have a big issue with exercise up there.
Oh, in microgravity environments.
Yeah,
exactly.
No. Yeah, yet again, that's another market that I could further pursue. No, I haven't thought of that. It's a pretty good idea.
Well,
that is a great idea.
Glad you think so, but it's tough dealing with NASA. You know, I'm a regional board director of the National Space Society, and we've got a conference coming up in Chicago on Memorial Day weekend. Maybe you should come up and show your wares then.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
That was Chicago Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can log on to our website, nss.org.
Okay.
And I'll look you up on the net and send you an email about it if I can find you on the phone.
Yeah, if you like, I have a website. It's called omegaware.com, omegaware.com. Mm-hmm. And you just go to the contact form and send me an email that way if you like.
Okay.
And there's omegaware.com.
Omega. Okay, I got it.
And a description of what Patrick did and a lot of the students did is at the InVenture Prize website. You can get to that because it's right on our website, insidetheblackbox.org. So check it out. And thanks for the suggestion.
Cool.
That's a great one.
Cool, thanks.
All right,
thank you.
All right, well, there you go. Right? So I didn't even think of NASA.
Yeah,
right?
Me neither. I mean, it's a great idea. And stuff like that happens all the time where somebody else will say, oh, what did you think of this market? You know, I mean, there's experience in ADD or ADHD.
Uh-huh.
There's calming symptoms that when wearing extra weight on your body will actually reduce those symptoms, thereby reducing the amount of medicine required. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of
If the shirt is so heavy that you can't get off the ground, you're going to be a bit calmer.
I'm thinking
absolutely.
About my kids, even without ADHD, if they're just sort of like pinned down, and I'm like, sorry, you can't go outside today.
It's like living on Jupiter.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you know what would be funny is if I actually added attachments to where you could just bolt your kid down to the floor.
You know, I don't want to say on the air that would be a good thing because someone would call the Department of, you know, Family and Child Services on me. But at one point in your life, all parents have thought about physical restraints involving a hydrogel shirt, I'm sure. We're not going to plug that on the air, though, because that would be utterly irresponsible of us. So Wow. I mean, so this is kind of interesting. So really what we're pointing out here is this is just the beginning, mm-hmm. right? So through all these facilities like the lab that you were talking about, Craig, you build these things and they keep getting modified. Mm. Well, let me ask you both you guys a question. What did you learn from your experience with the InVenture Prize program? Anything that you hadn't learned up to this point? Something new?
I think the biggest thing I've learned is how valuable having some outside influences on your project is. I've always been really scared to get that outside influence. But, you know, the organizers have been super helpful in guiding me through this process and just learning on how this whole intellectual property thing works. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I was completely ignorant before I started this.
Well, so did you get much outside influence, you know, back when you were in high school and working on these ideas for a while?
No, not too much. Okay.
But was it because no one gave you any outside influence or you didn't solicit it?
I'd say it was probably half and half. I was kind of scared to go out there without any intellectual property help, you know, without any protection.
Okay, and that makes sense, right?
Yeah, in high school, I mean, I pursued a lot of different business ventures. I mean, I owned a landscaping business in elementary school. Then I had a computer business, and then I had a automotive performance company. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with patents, I've always been told, you can't do that. So there's been a few people that will tell you can't do something. Mm-hmm. And then I finally got to tech, and I decided to go through with it. And just you know, I did all the research on my own.
Right.
And you kind of have to figure out, all right, well, even if they don't believe in me, I'm going to have to believe in myself.
Right. And I think what you realize when you do this, that, you know, intellectual property for, you know, reasonably, you know, not too complex inventions is not as complicated as people will make it sound.
Yep.
You know, you're filing a lot of things. It's good to get a lawyer involved. You'll be spending some money doing this sort of thing. But, I mean, you know, I do theoretical calculations on computers, right? So I'm only an inventor on one patent. And I'll never forget when we were trying to get some of our claims past the patent office in Washington. I was up all night making up all sorts of charts. It was for a medical device about, you know, resistance versus blood flow and this and that and thing. In the end, my co-inventor went up there with our patent attorney, and he showed him a prototype of it. And it's literally a stent that just pops out, right, to hold an artery open. And it looks like those little Chinese finger traps. He showed the patent clerk this. Oh, it's like those Chinese fingers. Boom, we're done. That was it. That's all they need to see. So it's not always rocket science. You get a reasonable lawyer who's not going to gouge you. And you guys, of course, get some nice legal fee help with the InVenture program. And the reason I ask that question, though, is because you're right. You don't want to talk to people because you're worried, are they a competitor? Are they going to steal the idea? Yeah. Are they one of my loudmouth friends and are they going to tell everybody about the idea? Or worse than that, even if it's your aunt who's probably not going to steal the idea, and if your aunt would steal the idea, she's not much of a relative. But there are a lot of naysayers. They're kind of like, well, you don't want to do that, you know. Whereas I've seen the judges that Craig works with in action, and they're very good, like Merrick First and David Koo and these kinds of guys. They were there for the first one, and I think, weren't they involved for this year?
David Koo, one of our most entrepreneurial professors, was one of the judges. We also had a number of other very successful entrepreneurs. That'd be Laura Hodgson, Greg Foster, and Scott, radio host Scott Slade.
And they're very encouraging, but also real, for lack of a better adjective, devil's advocate-like, I guess.
You know, well, like, they're thinking, well, what I want to
invest. Who's going to buy this stuff? Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, also, I mean, you have a lot of people who say, oh, well, if it's such a good idea, why doesn't anybody else try to do it? And so I had a lot of that when I was younger, and what you just have to come to realize is, you know, it might be a great idea, somebody might have thought about it, but mm-hmm. they might be in the same spot where they just didn't have the resources to go through mm-hmm. with it. And, you know, I think there's a bunch of statistics, and I don't want to throw out the numbers, but there's a difference between an inventor that doesn't follow through with his idea. There's a lot of people that come up with ideas. Almost everybody comes up with ideas. But there's a difference between the inventors that come up with them and the inventors that follow through with them. And that's something that the InVenture Prize will really allow an inventor to do, is actually follow through with their ideas.
So is that something that you learn, that's the critical part, the follow through, more so much than the idea?
Yeah, I guess that's a huge part of any invention, is the follow through. Right. I mean, you could try to do one prototype and just give up, or you could go through with a few of them and then say, all right, well, it really isn't a good idea. It's just not feasible at the time. You might come back to it 5 years down the road.
Right.
So there's a lot of features to an invention, and it's really, you know, risk versus feasibility.
Mm-hmm.
So
So, but doesn't everyone say that? Doesn't everyone look at a new invention and say, well, if it's so good, why hasn't someone done it before? Same thing in intellectual property law. They always say, well, now that I see it, it's obvious to one skilled in the art, which is the acid test for innovation in the patent literature. But in hindsight, everything's obvious, isn't it? I mean, you know, we look at this sort of stuff. I mean, Ted Turner, people thought he was crazy when he proposed a 24-hour news station. He barely made payroll for years. Mm. But in hindsight, how do you live without CNN? I mean, I watch it all the time. I used to live in Switzerland, and I was up late one night during the San Francisco earthquakes, and my German was good enough to pick up on the news blurb that there was an earthquake in San Francisco. You go back, boom, it's all there. Right, and it's there all the time. So to me, it's a perfectly reasonable idea, but people thought he was crazy too.
Absolutely, wow. Absolutely.
So an important part of being successful in the Inventor Prize is to in the fall before the main competition, we have an Inventor Prize school, and what we try to do is help the inventors answer these questions. Has it been thought of before? I mean, if it has, you shouldn't waste your time with it.
Yep. Right.
Another important question is, does anybody really want it? I mean, I'm sure the inventors think it's cool, and Sarah will play her drum till the end of time. But are other people going to buy this? Are they going to pay $50 for it, $100, $500? What will they pay? That's right. Is there a market? So there are scientific ways to answer these questions to know whether it's worthwhile to invest your time and money and energy into it.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, what on the how do you scientifically answer the question? Would anyone want it? I mean, do you do focus groups or?
Yeah, so you can hire companies or you yourselves. It's a little difficult to do it yourself because you're typically biased.
Mm-hmm.
But to ask objective questions from potential customers. I mean, say you're standing in the grocery aisle and you say, you know, hey, I've got this crazy idea. Would you mind just chat with me for a sec and let me see what you think? You show them a picture of it. You tell them how it works. You get their first reaction. If they tell you, I would never buy that, or it looks ugly, or it's too big, it's too heavy, I wouldn't pay more than $5 for that. You're getting really critical potential customer feedback that you can use.
Absolutely.
Right, and the initial feedback doesn't necessarily mean it's infeasible. It means that, okay, the thing they like about it is this. The thing they hate about it is this. If I can change that, it might actually be.
And that's a question that you can look to answer. And by answering those questions, you then better your product along the way. So initially, like I said, you know, I had an envision for my product, and it started to, I guess, in a sense, mutate over the course of time.
Yeah.
I would talk to a lot of people and say, you know, what do you think? What do you think? Initially, it was almost my father. My dad's a pretty big pessimist, and I'm a very optimistic person. So every time I had any kind of idea, I would always put it past him. And I knew if I could get him to buy it, then I could get almost anybody to buy it.
So he was your devil's advocate.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely.
So is that a fair statement to say that most inventors are optimists?
Yeah, I think a culture of innovation is one where people are willing to accept failure. That there's a high risk of failure, and you're willing to accept that and go on.
Okay, so then it's also fair to say that inventors, at least successful ones, have a thick skin. They can deal with many, many failures or many failures within the same invention until
if not at first, then eventually down the road. Yeah, it kind of gets developed over a course of time. It's like callus. So get to the point where you're just like, all right, well, he just doesn't like it. It's just a bad day for him, so I'll go ask somebody else. And eventually, I mean, if people start asking the same question over and over, then you might want to start considering it. So.
Ah, okay. So, yet again, an analogy to stand-up comedy. Lots of failure. You know, if they don't laugh at it three times in a row, maybe you want to change that whole idea.
So, I know at least in software startups, which is what I'm most familiar with, you usually just get some rickety prototype and give it to a customer, and then you just iterate on what the customer requests.
Right.
Because if you have this idea for all these features, you're going to do them all,
right.
And then you're going to give it to some customer, and they're only going to use 5% of what you made, and it was a complete waste of your time.
Absolutely.
And since you can change software very, very fast, you just keep doing that over and over. And
absolutely.
By the end of it, you have customers, and they like your product, so that's what you want.
Great.
Yeah, Georgia Tech actually has a class for entrepreneurship, and they actually state that concept. There's a whole bunch of case studies about innovation, and how a lot of innovation overshoots the customer expectations. And that overshoot, depending on how far you go, actually will cost you more in the long run. Because if you overshoot too far, then nobody's going to buy your product because it's cheaper to do one way over the other.
Yeah.
And much like, you know, the going to the CD or the DVD or the Blu-ray, it overshoots. I mean, nobody uses that storage space, but then over the course of time, that storage space starts getting eaten up by software developers, by programmers, by whoever, and then it just becomes the norm.
By Windows 7, for example, I don't want to relate my experience this morning. Normally, I like Microsoft products, but yeah, I remember when we had a 10 megabyte hard drive in our computer in grad school, we thought, we're never going to fill that up. Now I have files that are multiple gigabytes, so you think about Blu-ray technology. And I guess we've got another caller, right, Trent?
Hello?
Welcome to Inside the Black Box. Do you have a question or comment about innovation?
Yes, I was wondering, I'm calling from DeKalb County. I was wondering what universities promote inventions, and how do they weed people out and say, well, we're going to give you money to invent new things?
So are we talking about students or faculty?
Well, both.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I guess before maybe Craig chimes in on this, my answer would be most top-level research universities better be doing this.
Yeah, I think, if you asked me what universities I thought were the most innovative and entrepreneurial, I would probably put MIT, Berkeley, and Stanford in a league of their own there. And I think Georgia Tech has the potential to be as good or better, and we are moving in that direction as fast as we possibly can.
Right.
And then your second question was, how do you evaluate an invention to know if you should put money into it, I guess, in the course of this competition? And what we do then is we challenge the judges to think about five criteria. How likely is this thing to actually become a successful product? How marketable is it? How big is the market size? You know, are we talking 100 people, or is everyone in the country going to want one of these? Is it innovative? And lastly, we try to gauge the inventor's passion for the idea, because you have to be passionate to push it so far through so many dark nights to get it onto store shelves. And so with those criteria in mind, it's difficult, but we try to narrow the field to the finalists and then ultimately the winners. But the students who have walked through this program, not just the onstage event, but have been a part of Inventure Prize School and have registered and thought about their ideas and so forth, are doing the right things. They're winning too. They're pursuing their ideas. And there's no reason that the Inventure Prize is the end or the beginning for them. It's just a step along the way. And so we encourage them and continue to work with them if they're motivated to go on.
Right. So the answer is relatively simple, right? You know, does it have a probability of success? Mm-hmm. Does it have a potential market?
Mm-hmm.
And one intangible that you mentioned that I think most people wouldn't think of is the passion, right? I mean, so we have our own intellectual property legal services here at Georgia Tech. When faculty come up with inventions as a result of their research, they can go and usually get preliminary patents filed very simply through that office. They're willing to help you out. They want to encourage that. They don't think so much about the passion, because I think they assume anyone dumb enough to take a faculty position is already passionate about working long hours on these sorts of things.
They also get to license the patent, so they want you to file as many as possible.
They do, right. So they're going to make money off of this. And this is the subject of an entirely different show about the Dole Buy Act and the fact that now universities and professors can benefit from even governments sponsored research. But I think that's amazing that you explicitly put down passion, because you realize if the person walks in there and they're like Eeyore and they're like, well, it'll never make it, you know, it's not going anywhere. And you will have wasted your time and energy by encouraging them to do that.
Absolutely. And there's been a lot of studies that show, you know, if you ever try to sell a product, try to sell it with a smile. You know, if you start smiling with somebody, they're more open to listen to you than if you're just, you know, you're very monotone, you're just looking down at the floor, nobody's going to look at you.
So that's an interesting question. I mean, so you guys learned about, you know, legal issues and marketing and how to determine whether or not your invention may be feasible. Did you learn about that, what do we call it, the soft skill side, the marketing, the interaction with the market? Did you guys learn much about that during the course of the school and the activities?
Yeah, I mean, there were plenty of different info sessions and plenty of influential speakers that gave a whole bunch of very strategic and innovative ways to approach your idea, all across the board, from marketing, sales, pitching was a huge one. And there's schools that could be evolved from those, and you could take, you know, one of those programs and then evolve it into two or three different different info sessions. Mm-hmm. But no, there, I mean, the Inventor Prize has come a long way. I mean, it's only been open for 2 years, and it's come a long way. They're extremely helpful along the way. And how large was it last year?
Well, last year was the first year we did it, and we had 200 students compete. In almost every metric, it's gone up. Number of faculty participants, the prizes have doubled. The number of undergraduates competing has doubled.
Right.
Number of people in the audience tripled.
The
television
better
broadcast.
Better looking host.
Better looking host. The host is twice as good looking. You know, and I'd like to add, you know, in terms of talking about these other universities, what universities are most innovative and things. You know, there's nothing else like this in the country, and we're really excited about competing with these other top universities in the Inventor Prize. So it's right now it's the Inventor Prize at Georgia Tech, but we are one of our goals for next year is to have the Inventor Prize at other schools.
Oh wow!
And we are working with, I won't say too much at this point, but hopefully it'll be on TV with other universities.
Oh great. Right. So really what you're trying to do is take the next step. I mean, so here at Georgia Tech, we do like these cool mechanical engineering robotics competitions. You and your colleagues do that. I think Bill Singhos, when he was at MIT, was actually involved in their televised thing. That's the thing people think of when they think of engineers. And what did you call it? The nerdiness? And you know, ladies and gentlemen, that's a compliment to us. We're all about the nerdy. That's a good thing.
I should say Pete's wearing our host Pete is wearing his nerd pocket protector right
now. Yes, and for appearing on the show, all our guests will receive the official plastic vinyl pocket protector. So you have that to look forward to. But I think you're right. The whole idea of prizes in a competition is relatively new, even compared to those schools like MIT. And MIT's been doing this for a long time. I mean, I was in graduate school there many, many years ago, and my minor was entrepreneurship. So they work with folks at the Sloan School and try to put together a lot of this sort of stuff. But I agree with you. I think the Inventor Prize is truly unique, and you're trying to get it all over the country. So, wow. All right, so we're getting near the end of the program. Let me see if I can summarize what have we learned, and then we can comment on that sort of thing and see if there's anything we need to add to that. So what we've learned is that the Inventor Prize has produced a lot of amazing inventions. First of all, a tight-fitting hydrogel shirt. I like the tight-fitting part because I'm telling you, you have a tremendous opportunity to sell that at the South Jersey Shore for guys that like tight-fitting shirts. Me, not so much. When I wear a tight-fitting shirt, I usually scare small children. But not only do you have the advantage of this athletic advantage, but, you know, you can heat it, you can cool it, you can use it for therapeutic advantages. Thanks to our caller who pointed out that maybe NASA might want to look at it for microgravity experiments or applications. And maybe the National Space Federation in Chicago upcoming, you'll maybe be there talking to people about that sort of thing. I think that's really neat. And then for the drummers out there, changing the tone of your tom-toms and things like that. I mean, I just think that's cool. I'm a nerd. I mean, I'm not talking about the technology aspect. As a musician, I think it's way cool. Am I way off base, Trent? You're giving me the look again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. So so not only did it produce those inventions, but you got some really neat ones just in the final. What was Drive Awake? That sounds good to me. Does this like give me an electric shock in the back of my ear or something?
No, this was a great team. You know, Driving Awake is very important.
I have problems with that. I'm admitting that.
So their invention measures your brain waves while you're driving.
Or lack thereof, in my case.
And when you're falling asleep, then it zaps you. No, it makes a beeping noise and wakes you up.
It should zap me. Is that an add-on?
That's right.
You might have to sign a disclaimer first, but absolutely.
But I think it's fair to say that not only did it produce some really interesting inventions, it appears to me as though you have made tremendous headway in changing the culture. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the culture of Georgia Tech has always been one of critiquing others and, you know, always trying to provoke innovation. With the Inventor Prize, it gives you the opportunity to follow through, which is what we mentioned earlier.
I think it's really impacted a lot of my classmates, a lot of my friends. You know, they see me in the hall and they're like, "Oh, I thought your invention was so cool. Maybe I can have an idea like this next year." I had 40 of my closest friends at Tech here came to the invention competition, and they were all excited about it. And you know, we're definitely changing culture.
And I would agree with that, and to all my colleagues here at Georgia Tech, and universities worldwide, I mean, we're frustrated. It's hard to get undergraduate students to actually remain awake at 8 o'clock in the morning for a class. So to get them excited about not only what they're doing, but what their friends are doing. And so I would agree. I think you've really made headway at changing the culture.
Right? It's a tall order, changing the culture. That is such an abstract notion, you know. So this competition was just a stab at chipping away at it by creating a on-stage, high-profile event to celebrate nerdiness and inventing.
Right. So that's really half of it. I mean, half of it is celebrating it.
That's
making
right.
people realize, look, this is important.
That's right.
Which is what the National Science Foundation and the Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology and places like that are saying, innovation and creativity is important, but we're telling the world that at Georgia Tech, it's important. And then there's the more tangible stuff, right? The fact that you actually have classes, you actually have a school to get people started. You know, they get the advantage of what Sarah mentioned, the outside influence. But the outside influence, not by the aunt who's like, it'll never work. It's by people who have invented, who have started companies that will tell you, look, this is a big problem. You need to address this. And this is really neat. You should go for it. You know, as well as other things that they're learning along through these various things. Plus, the other tangible thing is, you know, access to help financially to build a prototype, access to facilities, tools, labs, access to legal services to help you protect this so you can actually go talk to people and not worry about it. So I think it's absolutely amazing. I mean, are you thinking that parents are out there now or students, potential students at Georgia Tech, thinking, this is part of the reason I want to go to Georgia Tech now?
Nothing would make us happier than to know that.
Not just the basketball team or the football team.
You know, nothing would make us happier than to know that students are choosing Georgia Tech because it's a place where they can take their own ideas into reality.
Yeah.
That means we're definitely having that cultural impact.
Okay, cool. So anything else to add there? Any final thoughts?
I love Georgia Tech.
Okay. Yeah, he's smooth. I mean, I can see him on the shopping channel saying, you know, not only will we give you two hydrogel shirts, but we'll throw a third one in as well and some OxyClean.
I'm not done. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's not all. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And just a note to our listeners, next week we're going to have Lauren Williams, who originally hosted that show, Chemistry and Why We Hate It. He's going to be here with another former guest, Nick Hudd, to discuss something that we actually discussed last week. We talked about the Cobb County evolution controversy. We'll be talking about molecular evolution and what they're doing with ribosomes in a show entitled Where Did We Come From? The Ribosome, discussing a new multimillion-dollar NASA-funded center for ribosomal evolution and adaptation. And Nick and Lauren will be joining us to talk about this whole concept of molecular evolution. If you've got a question or comment about this program or a suggestion for a future show, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Our chief engineer is Trent Altman. Our theme music is composed and performed by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science and Technology, Only Funnier.